You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
What a tale. What a finish to Group D. And what a way for Denmark to seal their place in the round of 16.
Well, day 11 gave us unbelievable drama. And Chris, two mammoth stories in Groups B and C.
Yeah, the calculators have been out. Denmark amazingly through after starting the day bottom. History for Austria as well, also into the last 16. And a few other nations are celebrating too.
There's also an emotional farewell for Goran Pandev. Plus, we look ahead to two huge fixtures in Group D.
Jack Grealish, Zlatko Dalic and Kieran Tierney speak to us ahead of another decisive day at Euro 2020.
Welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and joining me is my co-host Chris Parrott.
Wow, that's all I can say to that.
Some brilliant drama in Copenhagen. We'll get to that in a moment. Also with us is UEFA commentator Phil Blacker. Phil, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Rob. Looking forward to the show. Plenty to get stuck into, isn't there?
Oh, Phil, we're not short of stuff. Okay, Chris, do you want to get us going? Denmark. They are through somehow to the round of 16.
Yeah, extraordinary. Went into their game knowing they needed to win probably and needed to win big, and they did, thanks to some outstanding goals. For me, probably the moment of Euro so far, when you heard it there, Andreas Christensen almost broke the back of the net, but it followed two great saves from the goalkeeper. So you had that crowd at Parken twice devastated and then elated in the space of about five seconds.
And then we
had a moment at the end where they weren't sure if they were through. They went into a huddle, got the phone out, and then the moment when they realised that they were through to the last 16, went up to the stand, celebrated with the fans, moments that will live long in Danish footballing history.
Oh, well, let's hear some of it. This was the reaction at full-time in Copenhagen. Listen to this. Absolutely incredible. The way they were celebrating with their fans, right in front of that red wall behind one of the goals. I mean, given what's happened with Christian Eriksen, with everything they've gone through this tournament, that must be unbelievably satisfying for them.
For sure. And you know that Christian Eriksen would have been in their minds this evening. And we're seeing some pictures now of the UEFA Fan Festival in Copenhagen, which went absolutely bonkers at full-time
yeah,
as well.
So good, yeah.
There was belief. We've been hearing on our show from Sture Sando, our reporter over in Copenhagen, saying, yeah, we still believe that it's possible going into this match. But when Russia scored a penalty to make it only 2-1, they weren't going through. And then they rallied. And thanks to also what happened in St. Petersburg, where Belgium beat Finland to make sure they topped the section, that was enough to put Denmark through with only 3 points. But now, you know, now they really are going to start to believe that something very special might happen at Euro 2020.
And Chris, quickly, we will get to it, but Austria make national team history.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time in almost 40 years that they have made it beyond the group stage in a major international tournament. Went into that huge game against Ukraine, knew they had to win it, and they were excellent. And we're going to hear from our reporter Jordan Maciel later on, who was at that game. Austria fully deserve it of their place in the last 16. History for them, the first time ever at the European Championships they made it that far.
And we want you to get in touch, all your thoughts today, using the hashtag Euroshow on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. We're asking you for your national team's best ever player in honour, Phil, of the great Goran Pandev, who said goodbye to the international game today with North Macedonia.
He did, cap number 122. He was given a guard of honour by his teammates when he was substituted in the game. A legend of the sport for North Macedonia. Their record scorer, 38 international goals, nearly twice as many as their second top scorer. You look what he's won, a Champions League, 5 Coppa Italia, over 100 goals in Serie A. He's the man that scored the goal that got North Macedonia to their first major finals. He scored their first goal at a major finals, of course, on match day one. An incredible career. Turns 38 next month. This is it for him in international football, about 7 years after he first decided to retire from international football. Look what he's gone on to achieve since then. And they weren't able to go on and get their first point at the competition. They knew their fate, of course, before the game. But Pandev bowing out in some style.
Yeah, we want your thoughts. Hashtag Euroshow. Your best country's player, Irish Abroad on Twitter, has gone for Robbie Keane for his captaincy, his goals and his caps. A legend. Todor has gone for Berbatov for Bulgaria, but Karamelina says no, Stoichkov. Keep your suggestions coming in. Hashtag Euroshow. Well, let's get straight to the action then. Group B, Belgium were top at the beginning of the day. Russia second, Finland third and Denmark with no points at the bottom. But it was possible that any of these teams could go through. Here's how the action unfolded.
We arrive at the climax, the culmination of Group B. The next 90 minutes to determine who joins Belgium. Dam score! Brilliant! Left off for Denmark!
What an incredible goal.
Half time, Group B on a knife edge. Here's a chance! Here's a goal! Yusuf Poulsen for Denmark! Chance for Russia, maybe. He's given the penalty. Sobolev goes down, right down the middle for Russia, who pull it back to 2-1.
Long in by De Bruyne for Marlon! Off the goalkeeper and surely in! Belgium do break through!
Oh, how about that? Christensen, a firecracker to send Copenhagen wild!
Lukaku for sure! He has pinned that in!
Højbjerg on the outside. Møller! That wraps it up in Copenhagen.
Our best day so far, I think. Best day so far. Brilliant drama there. Denmark seeing off Russia by 4-1. Belgium beating Finland to finish the day in third. They're still not out of the competition. At one point, they were going through. It was just unbelievable stuff. Chris Parrott and Phil Blacker with me. Where do you want to start? We'll start in Copenhagen, Chris. Yeah. So how did this game sort of work out?
Well, I mean, it was lit up really by the opening goal scored by Mikkel Damsgaard, this young 20-year-old who came into the team as the playing replacement for Christian Eriksen. How about that for a narrative? And he bent in a fantastic opener, and that got Parken rocking. They then scored a second, and you thought, okay, they're reasonably safe now.
Yeah, gifted that goal to Yusuf Poulsen.
It was a blind back pass from Zobnin, and Poulsen scored, and you thought everything's going their way. Then they conceded a penalty, and Artem Zuber tucked it away to become Russia's joint record all-time leading goal scorer, which will be lost, I'm sure, in most of the bylines about this incredible match. And then you thought, this is a huge test of character now for Denmark again in this competition. And they scored two late goals. The first from Christensen, as we've spoken about. Really, as that went in, and I know you agree with me, Rob, that is my moment of Euro so far. Yeah. It was unbridled joy at Parken. And then they got a fourth, and coupled with the 2-0 victory for Belgium, not too far away in St. Petersburg, it was enough for Denmark with 3 points to go through. And they have made history tonight. They are the first team in European Championship history to reach the knockout stages, Rob, having lost their first two group games. It's almost miraculous they've made it through, but they have.
And it was a brilliant performance, Chris, wasn't it? We talk about the emotion. You could see, of course, how much that they wanted it, that the difference that the fans made as well. But you have to channel that. You have to use it in the right way. And they did. They had to be patient. I thought first half up until that breakthrough goal just before halftime, wonderful goal from Damsgaard, that Russia had dealt with Denmark pretty well and not really afforded them any chances. But certainly second half, they stepped it up again. And it wasn't just down to the emotion. It was how they used that, how they took their chances. Three of the four goals were absolutely outstanding, and it was a thoroughly deserved victory in the end against a Russian team who, of course, would have gone through guaranteed with a point. It was a brilliant display from Denmark, and there is now, you kind of touched on it, I think, a sense of what they can do from here. They've got the momentum. They'll face Wales in Amsterdam, I think, next up on Saturday, and how far can they go after this?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to put it into some context, Rob, during that second half, Finland were second in their section, third in their section, fourth in their section over the space of about 10 or 20 minutes. The emotions in both games, but particularly in this match in Denmark, was something which I think will live long, long in the memory of the European Championships.
Denmark actually went with the same team that that did so well against Belgium but did ultimately lose the game, went with the exact same 11, Kasper Hjulmand. Russia were at full strength because Mario Fernandez was back fit. They basically had everyone available to them. Early chance for Alexander Golovin to take the lead, but Denmark ended up running away with it. Parken going absolutely wild, and wonderful celebrations at full time. Phil, given what's happened with Christian Eriksen, that will mean the world not just to the players and the staff on the national team, but the country as well.
Oh, of course. Huge support from the nation, from neutrals, I think, given everything that they've been through. But they also deserve real credit as individuals, as a team, for being able to do what they have done and respond how they have responded, given the psychological impact of seeing what they saw to their teammate, what happened on in the opening game, to be able to sort of process that as humans, as friends, as well as players. And I thought they bounced back brilliantly against Belgium, and they played well against the world's number one ranked team on match day two. But having seen their lead overturned, losing the opening two fixtures, it would appear that they were going to come up short. So to recover it in the manner that they did and to produce the type of performance that they did, given everything this squad and the country has been through, I don't think you can underestimate the reserves of character that they've drawn upon and the credit that they deserve.
Yeah, and you know, Kasper Schulman at the end took the adulation of the Parken crowd. And if you remember right back to the first show we did, Sture Sander was telling us that, remember, he wasn't supposed to be in charge for Euro 2020. He was supposed to take over after it finished a year ago, but, you know, it was delayed. And he had not coached Denmark in front of supporters at Parken before this summer's European Championships. You think what he's just gone through at Parken Stadium, to see that, to see those incredible scenes. And he and his team, as Phil said now, take on Wales. And that is going to be a very, very intriguing game to see who goes through now to the quarterfinals of the competition.
What a goal from Christensen. I know we've talked about it, but Chris, you were looking up his numbers. He actually doesn't score that many goals, the Chelsea defender.
Pretty sure it's his second international goal in more than 40 caps. And you know, young Safonov had made two fantastic saves. And you thought, because at that stage, Denmark really did need another goal. And you thought, this is going to be heartbreak. And then the only word is he walloped it. And it went beyond Safonov before he could see it. And that scene, as it hits the back of the net and the crowd erupt, that was something really, really special.
A proper wallop. This is what Artur Petrosyan, by the way, our Russia reporter, said on UEFA.com. Russia were good for 38 minutes, but that is not good enough. When they needed to switch to attack and create, shoot and score, not much work. Denmark are the deserved winners here. There's little argument with that, Phil. And you suspect the mood now going into those knockout stages for Denmark will be extremely positive.
It has to be. As I say, they've got all the momentum now. They've done what looked unlikely, shall we say, after the first two defeats, although the way that other results had gone in the group, this was always a possible scenario, and they knew if they took care of business in this one, they would put themselves in with a shout. They, of course, needed Belgium to do them a bit of a favourite in the other game, as it turned out, but this was all about that Danish performance, and now they can regroup and refocus for the knockout stages, ride that wave of emotion, maybe build on that momentum. But more than that, build on this, on the performance that they put in, because this was an excellent display against a Russia team who had it all to play for as well, who'd beaten Finland in the previous match, knew that they had their chance to get out of the group. In what was actually, I think, their first game in a major finals outside of Russia since Euro 2016, having hosted the previous FIFA World Cup and played their first two matches at home. And they didn't really deal with it. Denmark took advantage of playing in front of their own supporters, but it was so much more than that.
Yeah, they certainly enjoyed playing in front of their own fans. Denmark, by the way, have won 62 of their 107 matches at Parken Stadium. I think that home advantage certainly helped them see this one through. Finland, meanwhile, as a result of everything that's happened, were denied that second spot because they were drawing it with Belgium, and that was enough. They conceded 16 minutes from time. So in their debut competition, they nearly had themselves a guaranteed round of 16 spot. They do finish third in the group. Russia bottom. Chris, talk us through the drama in St. Petersburg, where there were a lot of Finland supporters. It's not that far from St. Petersburg.
No, and they were making a right old din, and I think they were truly starting to believe they could hold on for the famous point. They may still go through. They will have to wait and see now. It took an own goal, unfortunately, from Lukas Kradetsky, who is one of their stars, who has done so much to get them this far.
Saved a pen against Denmark.
Penalty against Denmark. And header from Thomas Vermaelen, as you heard, came back, hit Hradecki. Nothing really he could do. And then the second goal from Romelu Lukaku was fantastic, unerring finish. Another great moment from Kevin De Bruyne. And I think, look, Belgium ensured top spot. They ensured 3 victories from 3 games. And also you saw really important minutes from Eden Hazard, who played the 90, a start for Kevin De Bruyne, a start for Axel Witsel. Perfect night for Roberto Martinez and his team, who weren't quite at their absolute scintillating, 100% best, but I don't think he wanted his team to be there. There was no point in, they were already through, there was no point in exerting unnecessary energy. They had enough, they did enough, and they roll on into the last 16.
It was 8 changes for Belgium to their side. And as Chris mentioned, by the way, there was a big cheer for Axel Witsel on his return, his first start January after his Achilles injury. We also saw Jeremy Doku look very lively on the wing and get a big congratulations from Roberto Martinez when he was taken off. For Finland, well, 10 of the 11 players started the defeat to Russia. Tim Sparv was crucially back from injury, but they just couldn't quite hold out. It did look like, Phil, and we've seen some brilliant, heroic defensive performances at this tournament so far. It looked like they were going to frustrate Belgium.
They did for so long, Rod, didn't they? And yeah, I think the longer it went on, the more that they began to believe it was a possibility. I always felt there was perhaps a sense of inevitability Belgium would get their goal, but Finland were keeping them at bay. Lukaku had put one in just before the own goal made the breakthrough, which was disallowed rightly, but marginally by a video review. And I think from the moment that the own goal went in and it was harsh on Hradecki, it was such an unfortunate moment. Finland, we're never really going to be able to recover from that. And I think if they do go out of the competition, and as you say, that's not certain yet because they have finished third, they will reflect on the defeat against Russia in the previous game because that was their opportunity, having beaten Denmark in that opening fixture. As it's turned out, even a point against Russia would have been enough to send them through. I think it was always going to be a big ask against Belgium, even given that the changes that Roberto Martinez made because of the strength of the squad that the world's number one ranked nation have available. I think that the Russia game was the chance for Finland. It was a missed opportunity and they just came up a little bit short as a result of that against this brilliant Belgium team who got everything that they wanted out of the game, as you kind of touched on. And I think if a finish with 100% record in the group stage of a major tournament for the first time ever, actually, as a result.
Well, let's hear from Belgium star midfielder Kevin De Bruyne, who spoke to us straight after the match.
I feel okay. I'm feeling a bit tired now. It was a hard game. We knew that Finland was playing very compact and it was very difficult to break down. But I think from the moment we scored the first goal, it got more open and we knew they had to come. So I think the second half was much better. It's always nice to have appreciation, but in the end, it's all about how we perform as a team. You know, I'm trying to push the team to get better and better individually also. I think we learned a lot today and we need to get ready for the next game.
Kevin De Bruyne's first start of Euro 2020, and he was mesmeric. I mean, it isn't just the range of passing, Chris, and a lot is made of that, and his ability to ping a shot with basically no backlift into the top corners. We've seen him do so many times for City. But and I'll call it a gallop in possession. Those big, they're almost like Steven Gerrard-style strides into the penalty area. He's such a good dribbler of the ball, and I suppose it comes back to the fact he used to be more of a winger way back in the day.
Well, I think we don't necessarily think of Kevin De Bruyne as one of the quickest players out there, but I bet travelling with the ball, he is right up there. And that almost telepathic link that he has with Romelu Lukaku in particular is frightening for opposition teams, and they directly led to a goal. Again, we saw Lukaku once more out on the right wing at times. We saw an interview before the match with Eden Hazard when he was sort of chuckling and saying at half-time against Denmark when they trailed, when De Bruyne was brought on and basically played as a false nine and Lukaku played out on the right, he said that they were thinking, what is Roberto Martinez doing? And then, of course, it transpired he knew exactly what he was doing and it may well be the way they go for the rest of the tournament. But I think it's an interesting point with Eden Hazard is that, and we see this with Gareth Bale and Wales, how happy they look in their national team camps and how well they end up playing for their national team. And Eden Hazard looked like he was absolutely loving it. And for the rest of Euro 2020, that's a worrying sign unless you're a Belgium fan.
So they've just got this player just working his way back to fitness, haven't they?
Enjoying his football again, and you think, here we go. Imagine he peaks at the quarterfinals or the semifinals.
Romelu Lukaku amongst the goals again. He did have that disallowed goal, marginal offside, but it was offside from a super De Bruyne pass on there on 66 minutes. On three goals now with a few others at Euro 2020. Earlier on day 11, Group C came to its conclusion as well. The Netherlands went into the day knowing they would finish top. North Macedonia knew they would finish bottom. But Ukraine and Austria were both on 3 points each and faced each other at the National Arena in Bucharest.
With the Netherlands already through, it really is now all about Ukraine and Austria. In again by Alaba. And Austria go in front. Christoph Baumgartner flies in.
Doesn't have to do too much to lose his marker. Prods out his boot and gets a full contact.
It's Franco Foda and Austria who celebrate their success in Bucharest. Means that they are through from Group C.
What a moment for Austria, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic scenes at the end as they celebrated with their supporters and their coach. It was great at full time when he realised his team were through and he went jogging around. And he's been under a fair bit of pressure before the tournament began, and it was lovely to see. Well, Jordan Martial is our Austria reporter. He was at the game in Romania and he joined us straight after it finished. He said Austria played brilliantly.
Absolutely. I think there was a lot of skepticism before the game, myself included. A lot of people, you know, were convinced that Austria were going to go out and play for the draw. They said that they weren't going to. They said they'd go out for the win. They needed that to finish second, and they definitely delivered from the first minute. You could see the initiative was there, the attacking intent was there, and to be honest, they should have wrapped it up in the first half, the number of chances that they missed.
Of course, Christoph Baumgartner got the winner. I've seen a fair bit of him for Hoffenheim in Germany. What was that moment like for him, do you think, and how key a player is he for Austria?
Oh, he's been brilliant since he broke onto the scene last year in the UEFA Nations League. Not a typical Baumgartner goal, to be honest. He's normally sort of, you know, he's a 1v1 player. He likes to dribble into the box and cut inside and shoot. So that was a very untypical goal from him. But, you know, they all count. You can see the celebrations afterwards. He ran straight to Alaba, who put in a brilliant cross. And even the bench were going crazy because of what that goal meant for Austria.
Who did you get to speak to after the game? I imagine pretty much everyone was overjoyed.
So I spoke to Florian Grillitsch, who was voted as star of the match. He was almost speechless, to be honest. He hadn't started a game yet, and he was brought in for today's game to bolster the three-man midfield. And he was speechless. He was over the moon with the performance, and he's dreaming of Wembley. You know, he can hardly wait to go to Wembley.
So what is the mood like amongst the group now? They've got Italy at Wembley. What a great tie in the round of 16.
Yeah, I mean, I think first things first, they're going to enjoy this victory. There's a lovely moment after the game where the players were just sat in front of the Austria fans, allowing the fans to serenade them. Foda said that they'll enjoy this moment. And then from tomorrow, preparations begin for Italy. And I think it's definitely an advantage now that they have clarity over who they're going to face, because Italy are definitely no easy game for any team.
And does it feel even more special to this group of players because what happened at Euro 2016 5 years ago, where many people fancied them to go a long way and, of course, they didn't even make it out of the group?
Definitely. And, you know, there's players in the squad today that were there back then, Dragovic, Alaba, Sabitzer, Hinteregger. They all had that experience in 2016 and they felt the pressure then. And so they came into this tournament with that burden. And you know, after the first win last week, it felt like that burden was lifted. And then they lost to the Netherlands and all of a sudden the pressure crept in. Will they do it or will they blow their chance again? And tonight they really showed that they'd learned from that experience. And it was just such a relief. You could see the fans were loving it. The players were having a great time. And, you know, whatever happens now, they've achieved their goal coming into the tournament. But that doesn't mean that they're done yet.
And Jordan, we're asking everyone in honour of Goran Pandev internationally retiring today with North Macedonia, best player for the respective national teams ever. So who would that be for Austria, do you think? The best ever player for the Austrian national team?
Oh, I think Andy Herzog's up there is the most capped player. Who knows? And David Alaba will always go down as one of the greatest players in Austrian history. He's certainly one of the most decorated players in Austrian football history, if not the most decorated. But I think that conversation can probably be had in a couple of years when he hangs up his boots.
And did David Alaba have any reaction to being drawn with Italy in the round of 16?
Yeah, I mean, he was asked a question and he said everyone's seen what Italy can do, how they perform so far in the group stages. But, you know, he also said that Austria are dreaming and anything is possible in football. And I think that's the right attitude to have for any team going into a game like that at Wembley.
Jordan, thanks for coming on the show.
Cheers, guys.
Jordan Martial, UEFA's Austria reporter. So Austria finishing second with their 6 points to get through. As for Ukraine, they finish third on 3 points. Their main man, Oleksandr Zinchenko, was very subdued after the match.
So disappointed. Everyone's so disappointed. Of course, they're not the result what we wanted. I think the way how we played first half is not acceptable. And we have to realize our level. We have to improve a lot of things on the pitch because the behavior of us in the first half on this kind of competitions is not acceptable. I think everyone was ready for the challenge, you know, ahead of us. Everyone felt good on the pitch, on the training sessions. I mean, like during all training sessions before the games, I don't know. But it's not about, I think, physical conditions. I think it's all about mentality.
The Manchester City man disappointed, Chris, because he knows the fine margins, how close they were to qualifying.
Yeah, absolutely. Came into this game, remember, only needing to draw to go through, and that would have taken them through in second place. So I think they will be disappointed, of course, with the fact that they were overtaken by Austria. And I think over the course of the game, you heard from Zinchenko there, I think Austria deserved to win. They were fabulous in the first half in particular. David Alaba was pulling the strings, Phil, and Ukraine now have to wait and hope and see.
They do, and I think they will reflect on a missed opportunity. But you're right, Austria were brilliant, and I thought they thoroughly deserved to win the game. But going into the match, I would have expected Ukraine to get the result that they needed. I think they proved in the previous couple of games that they have enough in this side to score the goals required, but they didn't really create those sort of chances. I think Andrei Shevchenko has talked about a lack of energy in the side, that they failed to create the openings against a really well-organised Austrian team. They look nervous, I think, at times, and now it is another nervous way. I believe that they've got a better goal difference than Finland in terms of the teams that have already finished third. So that is one side that they're going to finish above. They will need another, though, over the course of the next couple of nights. So the nervous wait for Ukraine will go on. But I think they've only got themselves to blame, perhaps, if they don't go on and make it through, because this was their chance. And unlike Austria, they didn't really rise to the occasion. And maybe the nerves got the better of them a little bit. I think that's by some of the players' own admission that they've talked about afterwards. So, yeah, the wait goes on for them.
The other match in Group C saw the group winners, the Netherlands, take on bottom of the group, North Macedonia, at the Johan Cruyff Arena.
Marlon slides it in. Memphis Depay, 1-0 to the Netherlands, from one end of the pitch to the other. Come the Netherlands once more. Memphis Depay, Wijnaldum in the centre. There's goal number two. Little touch from Marlon is a lovely one, and it falls at the feet of Wijnaldum. And he doesn't miss chances like those. The curtain comes down on a 20-year international career, an iconic figure in Macedonian football, the man who fired them to the finals and scored their first goal on the big stage, a fitting tribute to Goran Pandev at the end of a wonderful international career.
Goran Pandev given a guard of honour by his teammates as he left the pitch. We'll talk about him in a moment, but first on the Dutch, Chris, the top scorers at Euro now with 8 goals, one ahead of Italy on 7.
And they were mightily impressive. Frank de Boer said before the game he wasn't going to make wholesale changes despite the fact they were through as section winners. He only made a couple. One of those who came in was Daniel Marlon. And how good did the young PSV
forward
look?
Well, he's so selfless, Chris, isn't he?
So selfless.
Shooting positions. Even the other day he did the exact same thing for Dumfries for that goal.
Yeah, which given he's a guy who's trying to overtake Wout Weghorst now and trying to make his way into the starting 11. You know, a lot of strikers would have thought, no, my goal tally is important, I'm going to score. But twice now, he's linked up beautifully. And Memphis Depay and Gini Wijnaldum, the two other of that front, well, not a front three, but Wijnaldum, we're going to get onto him in a moment. Phil, I know you want to speak about him. The fact that he is so far advanced from one of the supposed three central midfield positions. And those three were absolutely stunning, weren't they, Phil? And if that is the Netherlands after a couple of changes, then they are going to be pretty confident going into this last 16.
They are, and they're playing their way into form. I think they've got better and better, really, as the competition has gone on, which is maybe one of the reasons why Frank de Boer opted not to make too many changes, but another couple of goals for Wijnaldum to add to the one that he got against Ukraine. He just looks a different player, really, when he pulls on the national shirt at the moment, certainly in terms of his goal threat. As he said, they were relatively straightforward finishes, I think, but he had to put himself in the position to be there and does so regularly for this Dutch team. So impressive in the side, and yeah, top scorers in the competition. They will continue with genuine confidence.
Two-goal hero Gini Wijnaldum was awarded Star of the Match, but he felt some of his teammates played even better.
Well, it always feels great to be Star of the Match or Man of the Match, but if I'm honest, I think Frankie or Memphis deserved it more than me, but you know how it is with football. If you score two goals and you win 3-0, obviously they will give you a Man of the Match or Star of the Match, but in my opinion, I think what I just said before, like Memphis and Frankie, they were unbelievable today. I think if they had Man of the Match, it would be deserved. I think the secret is just be in the right places. As you see today, there were two easy goals, but you have to stand in the places where the ball will come. So I think that's the thing what I did today. I think that's a quality, to be on the right spot and at the right time.
Gini Wijnaldum there. And this is name droppy, I know, but I did meet him when he was at PSV.
I knew this was going to come out at some stage.
Because it was him and Memphis Depay were doing an interview together, and they were late for a Philip Cocu team meeting, and it was Wijnaldum who pulled rank and made sure all the players turned up on time for the meeting. He was like, come on, you've got to go, or you're going to get fined, and dragged everyone, including Memphis, to the meeting. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Okay, I'll give you the boast. That's a nice little anecdote.
Okay, Lindsay Hooper, by the way, has been at the UEFA Football Village with a very pleased Netherlands fan.
I'm joined by Hussein, who's enjoyed the group stages immensely, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the group stages. I think that three wins is great. I wasn't very confident going into the tournament, as were many other people probably weren't that confident in our team, but we've proved them wrong, I guess. We've done well.
And we've spoken about favourites going into the tournament. The Netherlands weren't one of those teams that were being mentioned, apparently eighth in that list. Are they higher now?
Definitely, 100%. We've won three of our group stage games. Not many teams have done as well as we have in the group stages.
There have been some great performances from players. Going into the last 16, who's the player that you think you can't do without?
Frenkie de Jong. Frenkie de Jong is by far the best player in the Netherlands and probably the best player at the tournament so far.
He has been fantastic to watch. Lindsay Hooper on the ground for us here. As for North Macedonia, they're out of Euro 2020. But there was obviously one big story involving their star man on day 11. For more on that, we go to our North Macedonia reporter, Igor Panevski. Hi, Igor.
Thanks for calling me, and I really appreciate it.
Three defeats from three, of course, but a debut campaign at the Euros. Everyone's enjoyed seeing North Macedonia. What was it like to be there to witness Goran Pandev's last game for the national team?
Oh, just very emotional, because probably the best player in the history of Macedonian football will retire. He ended his career in a big style, despite the defeat against Holland. Goran Pandev, the greatest player after he win the Champions League, he win a lot of trophies in Italy. Finally, with his national team was part of the big competition. He was on big scene, and he played for Euro, and he fulfilled his dream and fulfilled the dreams of all nation. Unfortunately, the fairy tale is ended after the first round, but who knows, maybe in next tournaments my country will participate, and maybe we'll through in the second round.
We heard the commentary earlier, and we all saw the pictures of the guard of honour for Pandev as he came off, and what it meant to him and what it meant to his teammates as well. Clearly a huge figure in North Macedonian football.
Of course, if you see the live coverage of the match when the Goran Pandev was substituted 20 minutes, I think, before the end of the match, all team was on the line and saluted the captain, saluted the leader, saluted the greatest player, and sent him to retirement. It was a very emotional moment, of course.
Igor, you've been following the team throughout Euro. What has been your favourite moment watching North Macedonia at this tournament?
Oh, absolutely. The first goal of Goran Pandev. He makes a history. He scored a goal which gave to North Macedonia placement at Euro against Georgia, and he scored the first goal at the European Championship against Austria. It was the perfect moment for the history of football in my country.
Igor, you've done a great job covering the team. We've loved having you on the show. Thank you so much for your coverage of North Macedonia through Euro.
Thank you very much.
Our North Macedonia reporter, Igor Panevsky. It's sad, Chris. We say goodbye to our reporters when the teams go.
I know.
They get knocked out too, in a way.
Well, I've actually started supporting some teams because of how much I've enjoyed listening to the reporters.
By the way, as a result of all the action on Monday, now we've concluded all the results, we can confirm that as a byproduct of the results, some teams have qualified in other groups now.
Yeah, five more teams are through, those with 4 points. They are Switzerland, the Czech Republic, England, Sweden and France. Because even if they were to finish third in their groups, they would definitely be one of the four best third place sides and would therefore go through. And it means, Rob, that we now have 11 of the last 16 done and dusted.
Okay, those teams again, Chris, for people tuning in.
So those through on Monday, aside from those that we've spoken about who were playing, Switzerland, the Czech Republic, England, Sweden and France. So congratulations to those five nations.
OK, plenty more to come as Group D comes to a close with England playing the Czech Republic and Croatia taking on Scotland.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
OK, so let's go to Tuesday's fixtures. Let's go through the fixtures in that one.
We only have two, but they are big games in Group D. Both kick off at the same time, 2100 Central European Summertime. It is the Czech Republic against England at Wembley, and it is Croatia against Scotland at Hampden Park in Glasgow. And just to reiterate again, great news for the Czech Republic and England. They go into that game both knowing they are through, but still a lot to play for as to who finishes first, second, or even third in this section.
The Czechs top the group currently. Let's go to that game then, and let's hear from England midfielder Jack Grealish. He says the team is in good spirits.
Obviously, you know, we have a lot that we can improve on. I still feel like we've had a good start to the tournament. You know, I think if we'd beat Scotland and drew against Croatia, you know, everyone would be singing our praises. But just because the results were the other way around, you know, everyone's been not so happy with that. But you know, the stuff that we're working on. You know, we're all human. We're all still working and learning day by day. We've only had the one goal at the moment, but you know, I'm sure come the end of the tournament, you know, we'll have a lot more. I'm not going to sit here and tell you our tactics. But yeah, you know, there's stuff that we're working on.
Jack Grealish there. There has been a clamour from the English public to see Jack Grealish in the team. He did have his thigh strapped up, but he said, my fitness is fine. I am available. Gareth Southgate's confirmed that Harry Maguire and Jordan Henderson will be involved in some way after their respective injuries. But we know that Ben Chilwell and Mason Mount right now are self-isolating after coming into contact with Billy Gilmore, who has tested positive for COVID-19. More on that in a moment. Phil Blacker, given that England are now already through, they're second in the section, to what extent do you think Gareth Southgate will tinker with his side?
I'm not necessarily sure if the change in circumstance will affect what he was going to do, but I do think he will change things up a little bit. England now can play with a little less pressure, perhaps, but it won't necessarily alter the approach to the game, which has to be, I think, more positive than we saw against Scotland. It's difficult with England, isn't it, to kind of gauge the mood, because a win, as we saw against Croatia in the first fixture, and all the optimism returns, and then a performance on match day two against Scotland, and the criticism is equally swift. So I think it does give them the chance to play with a break off a little bit. He's made it clear, hasn't he, that Harry Kane is going to start again, and I think we will see Jack Grealish, because I thought he was excellent when he came on against Scotland and looked the most likely to make something happen. There are so many attacking options in the England squad, it would be good to have a look at those before the end of the group stage.
Certainly would. So how about the Czech Republic? We're joined now by our UEFA reporter who's been following them for many, many years, Andre Zlamal. Hi there, Andre.
Hello to everybody.
So you're in a wonderful position ahead of this game at Wembley, and not just the chance to go through, but also to go through as the group winners.
you know, the spirits are very high. The Czechs, they are looking forward to the game. There will be a tremendous success. This tough group, England, Scotland, Croatia, and now we can top it. That's fantastic. And all the players are eager to play at this fantastic venue, fantastic stadium. And last time they met England, then they won 2-1. So just they know how it feels to defeat such a strong opponent. But on the other hand, even the media, even the players are saying the giant is still sleeping. You know, we know that England can show much better performances and that this giant may be very strong, and if it goes out with its best, you know, it can be very dangerous.
There are two players who've caught the eye in England, of course, in Socek and Soufal, and I understand the pair have been speaking to you about their relationship with West Ham and in the national team.
We spoke yesterday with Tomáš Souček. He said it will be a very special game for him. He's going to play against Declan Rice, his teammate from West Ham. And he was like, he said it will be very interesting for West Ham fans. Maybe, I think some of the West Ham fans wouldn't know which side to support. And he said like it will be very special because they play together, they train every day at the same post, and they meet, they are very close, and they play big games in Premiership. Now they will face each other. They actually met in Prague, but they didn't know. They didn't know themselves at that time. But now everybody knows Tomáš, and he is going like to be like proud to be there in wearing the Czech national shirt. And the same with Ladislav Soufal. They said that for both of them, they played in Liberec, in Slavia. Now they play in West Ham. Now they move to Czech Republic team. So just they will play again. And Tomáš said, we can play together blindfolded because we know. And Vladimír Soufal told me, when I hear Souček crying, like somewhere shouting at me, I know where he is, what he wants, what kind of pass he needs, because I know him. And he said, we've been together all the time, families. He never get on my nerves. There was not a single day when he got on my nerves, because it's impossible. He's such a nice guy. So just these two players, and apart from that is Matěj Vidra, also Tomáš Kalas, who play in England. So just for them, it will be a really special day to play against England, okay?
Andre, I don't know how else to ask this, but how is Patrick Schick's face after getting caught in the face the other day?
It was fantastic. I actually was asking the other players if they didn't want to take the penalty because he had some stains on his shirt, but he just realized that the penalty is going to be taken, that was given, for, you know, just, and he said, the goal is in the air, and I felt that I have to go. He just swapped shirts, took a clean shirt and scored a goal, but he had still his nose bleeding, and he scored. He went to the fans. There were a few fans. He knew the way because he scored against Scotland. He went there and put the gesture celebration. And of course, the journalist asked him, what was this? And he said, it was like my favorite MMA player, Nate Diaz, because he finishes the games. Finishes the games like that. Just it was everywhere on the front pages of magazines and newspapers. And Patrick Schick is really hungry for goals. I asked him, how does it feel to be, because last time we had the best goal scorer at Euro, it was Milan Baroš. And at one moment, Patrick Schick was with three goals, the best goal scorer, current best goal scorer. And he said, no, I don't count that. I don't count that. I just want to work for the team. But, you know, the fans count that. I would have a little bit of distrust. I think that Patrick Schick counts the goals as well and watches the others. And he will be hungry to score again against England.
Who is the best player in Czech football history?
Well, that is hard, isn't it?
How many can I say? How many? Give me two. Can I say?
You have to say one.
You have to say one, Andre. Sorry.
I have to say one. Pavel Nedved. I would say Pavel Nedved.
Ballon,
you know, he's the golden ball winner. So just you have to go for Pavel Nedved. But there are many, many more, and I hope they won't hear this show because they would they would be angry at me that I didn't mention them, and they would deserve it.
Look, Andre, there are no right answers, but Pavel Nedved is definitely not a wrong answer. What a player he was for the Czech national team, and of course for many club sides as well. Thank you very much for coming on the Euro Show again.
Bye bye.
UEFA's Czech reporter Andrej Zlamal there, as happy as can be, and who can be blamed? He's loving following his country around at Euro 2020.
And the adventure goes on. Well, the other match in Group D, also kicking off at 9 p.m. CEST, is Croatia versus Scotland. Chris, at Hampden Park in Glasgow, it's big, isn't it, this one? Scotland are yet to score a goal at Euro 2020, but fullback Kieran Tierney says the mood is good ahead of Croatia.
Yeah, I think it'll be similar in ways, different in ways. It's a different team, a completely different team we're playing against. So I'm sure the manager will alter a few things and change a few things where he thinks needs to be. Croatia are up there as well with the best teams in the world. They've showed that in the past, so it'll be a very tough game for us, but we're looking forward to it. If we're not motivated for this, then you'll never be. This is one of the biggest games. It'll probably be one of the biggest games of our career. So everyone's motivated in there, and we don't need any extras or that. We're looking forward to it.
Says he's actually taken up golf as well while being away with the national team, and that he's addicted to it, Kieran.
Has he really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm amazed he hasn't played golf before, given he's a footballer. But
I thought it was a standard. I thought it was a prerequisite. OK, well, let's speak to our Scotland reporter now, Alex O'Henley, who's been following the team. Hi, Alex.
Evening, guys.
Alex, the team must be feeling great after their draw with England.
Yeah, the mood in the camp is really, really good, very buoyant. Feeling a frustration, though, on the night and since then from the captain, Andy Robertson, in particular, who felt that they should have won it on the clear chances that they created. So maybe a tinge of regret there, but there's a world of difference from after the first game when things were a bit low and they were missing Kieran Tierney. Obviously, it's a big boost that he's back, and you could see that in the game at Wembley as well. So they really need to harness that now. That seems to be the message. Harness the energy with which they played at Wembley and take that into the Croatia game, which, as we know, is a must-win game.
How big a blow is it that Billy Gilmour isn't going to be available for this match? He was so good at Wembley.
Yeah, such a shame for him. Spoke to him after the game, and he just loved the whole experience. And you felt it was all there for him. That he will go on, and he'll become a superstar for Scotland, I feel. And the mood was, you could tell today, just the minutes we had watching the team in training, that they were slightly subdued. But within minutes, Kieran Tierney was pulling down someone's shorts, and they were laughing and joking. So there is a good togetherness in the squad. I think that's one of the things that's really striking to me, having watched many Scotland sides over the years. Sometimes you get the impression there may be cliques there, that they're maybe not on the same wavelength as the manager, but everyone seems to be on the same page here, pulling together, and I think that's going to be a big factor. They'll put this behind them quite quickly, I think. They'll roll up their sleeves and they'll go into the game against Croatia knowing that they have to win it. They may have to get maybe two goals, but first of all, they have to win it, and that'll be the prime target.
Steve Clarke's been talking about how there's still a good mood around the camp, and that they look to take momentum from the England result into this one. He's been interesting, actually, Alex, in terms of what kind of game he's expecting in Glasgow.
Yeah, he's very open-minded about it. He was very honest. He says he doesn't really know what to expect. If someone gets an early goal, the temptation will be to sit back and try and defend that goal. If it's still scoreless, say with 10 minutes to go, he expects both sides to go for it hell for leather, and it's going to be a very open game at some stage, and it might take as long as the 95th minute, depending on how many minutes we have at the end. And it was interesting also tonight in his press conference, he was saying the Tartan Army, who are in the stadium, they have to stay with the team from the first minute to the last, because he feels that's going to be important as well, that might give the players a big lift, as it did at Wembley. There was only about 3,000 there at Wembley, but you felt there was many more thousands there. They made a tremendous racket. So they'll be hoping to be the 12th man for Scotland against Croatia.
Finally, and this one is difficult given Scotland's great past, Alex, we're asking everyone for the greatest ever player for their respective nations. So you've got about 5 seconds to answer this, and I'm sure you probably need about 5 hours to think about it. But who is Scotland's greatest ever player?
Sir Kenny Dalglish. Purely because one of the first games I went to see, I think it was in Spain or Belgium, and he scored a perler of a goal, just as he did, using that big bum of his, getting away from defenders on the edge of the box, shielding the ball, and then whipping it in with his left foot into the top corner. Just, for me, it just it was a magical moment, and one where I really connected with international football, and to be able to score that kind of goal. And Kenny and his just usual celebrated away, just stood there, arms in the air. It's just a classic celebration, a classic goal from a classy player.
Alex, great answer and a great contribution. Thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
UEFA's Scotland correspondent Alex O'Henley there. Well, let's get the Croatia perspective from their head coach, Zlatko Dalic. He says this match against Scotland is so important for his side.
Well, before the match, before the Euro, we knew that the third match would be the one that is going to be decisive. And this is our last chance that we are going to try to take and to use and move on. And we're going to do our best. We're going to do all we can, so it will be so. It's going to be very hard. Yes, especially left flank and Robertson. That is very offensive. And yeah, he jumps very well. And he can also be very offensive, attack very rapidly. And that's their quality. That's their strength. But we are going to try to impose our style of game. And we're going to try to do things the way that we will agree about.
Zlatko Dalic has tried to take some of the responsibility away from his players after just 1 point from their opening two, saying it is his responsibility how the team has performed so far. But Phil, they still have a chance of making the round of 16. This should be a cracking one in Glasgow.
It's set up absolutely beautifully now, Rob, isn't it, given the way that other results have gone, because we now know a win for either and they will definitely be through on 4 points, a draw, and that would suit the likes of Finland and Ukraine, of course, who are waiting for other results. So every incentive for both teams to go on the attack, and Croatia will be looking to utilise their experience of such occasions, only 3 years since reaching the FIFA World Cup final, and still relying really on the bulk of that squad to try and get them through this. But the way other results have gone, this is absolutely on a knife edge now. It's going to be a cracking contest, I think.
Yeah, I think it is. And as we heard from Alex, it's going to be a really good atmosphere at Hampden Park. And, you know, I think what we've read in the last 2 or 3 days, really, ever since Croatia's last match, about how some of them are hurting a bit. Ivan Perisic has spoken. Mateo Kovacic has spoken. Big, experienced players. And, you know, a lot of those guys have reached a World Cup final, have been at the top of their game for a very long time. And I just wonder, I think quietly, they will know perhaps they haven't yet hit what they would have hoped, and they've said that publicly. But look, they have a real chance still of going through to the last 16. And as we've said with lots of countries, if Croatia make it, you know, it almost...
They've got that quality.
Yeah, it almost resets itself, the tournament, when it gets to the knockout stages. So they just have to try and make sure somehow they are there.
OK, Chris, let's remind everyone of who on Monday managed to secure their place in the round of 16.
Seven teams, Rob. We can't call it Super Monday. It doesn't quite work with the alliterate. Manic Monday,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, we'll take that.
So Austria and Denmark went through having played and having got the results they needed. And because of what happened, these sides also went through. Switzerland, the Czech Republic, England, Sweden and France. It means that we have 11 of the last 16, and we actually have the first two confirmed fixtures for the last 16 as well. So on the 26th of June, Wembley, Italy, Austria, and actually on the same day in Amsterdam, it's Wales against Denmark. So those are two, both of them, very interesting ties.
Yeah,
I think.
Phil, Wales, Denmark, they'll both be fancying that, I think.
They really will. That's a really tough one to call already, isn't it? But you're right, both teams will go into it full of belief, believing it is exactly the sort of tie that they can win. And I wouldn't like to pick a winner at this stage. I mean, a lot could still happen to change my mind, I think, between now and then. But that's a real 50-50.
And actually, that is the first day of the last 16, Saturday, the 26th. So it will be Wales, Denmark, the early game that day, and then Italy, Austria. And can I just be, can I just look ahead into the distance? And of course, anything can happen. Just say that Belgium and Italy were to win their last 16 ties, those two would meet in the quarterfinals.
Two of the favourites to win the competition.
Of course, there's a lot of football to be played between that happening, but at this stage of the competition, you can't help but just look ahead and think, well, what if that team plays that team? It gets really
exciting.
If
you're smart enough to work that out, you can start to think ahead to that. And Italy out of Rome for the first time at Euro 2020. So let's see how they get on. Phil Blacker, thank you very much for your company.
Absolute pleasure.
Chris, that was fun, wasn't it?
It was a good night. I mean, seven teams through on one day. Yes, please.
Not bad. Okay, remember, you can listen to the Euro Show live every match night at 11 p.m. CEST on the official app or on Euro2020.com. You can also subscribe to the official Euro 2020 podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows. The former England striker Alan Smith will be back on Tuesday night reacting to England against the Czech Republic from Wembley Stadium. So make sure you join us. Keep on tuning in. We're grateful to have you with us. See you next time at a cracking UEFA Euro 2020.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.